Now we're going to talk about Guantanamo Bay. Many in the U.S. and all over the world were looking forward to President Obama keeping his campaign promise to shut down the detention center at Guantanamo Bay. But new reports in the New York Times and by the Jamestown Foundation point to the complexities involved. Both are reports about former Gitmo detainees rejoining the ranks of Al-Qaeda. For more, we're joined by Gregory Johnson, a terrorism analyst with the Jamestown Foundation, and Robert Wirth from our partners at the New York Times, who has been reporting this story. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Robert Wirth, I'm going to start with you. The Bush administration essentially warned of this, saying that some of the men in detention were so dangerous that they could go back and rejoin Al-Qaeda. And now there seems to be some proof of that. Will you explain?
Sure. I think it's important to be clear that the man in question, Saud al-Shehri, was actually released from Guantanamo in November 2007. And the Pentagon has said that a number of former detainees at Guantanamo who had been released had gone back to the fight, and the phrase they used, had joined terrorism groups, and some of them had been killed in Iraq and elsewhere. So this man, in other words, his example does not relate to people who are currently in Guantanamo. Of that group, there are a number who appear, based on what we know, to be fairly harmless. There are others who seem to be quite dangerous, and I think one of the tasks at hand for the Obama administration is to sort out which is which and deal with them appropriately.
And Gregory Johnson, clearly there was this concern when the Bush administration was releasing detainees, so much concern, in fact, that they set up a program, right, to rehabilitate those who were released from Guantanamo Bay. Do you want to explain how that program works for us?
Right. The program in Saudi Arabia was based on an earlier version in Yemen that had been not terribly successful. It had only managed to convince a few returned detainees and other al-Qaeda suspects not to carry out any attacks in Yemen, but not so much to give up their jihadi ideology. So what the Saudi program tried to do was essentially revamp, reconstitute this program and do a much better job. And they seemed to be initially quite successful, and they went
How is that success measured?
Well, they measure it, and there have been a number of reports since Robert's article came out on Friday where the Saudis are defending their program, saying that these are the only two people who have went back. But one of the problems is that they seem to have lost track of a few other individuals that they're not sure if they've rejoined Al-Qaeda or where they are. They're just missing, and the Saudi security services don't seem to have a good handle on them.
And let's note that Robert Wirth is currently coming to us from Beirut, which explains the bit of the scratchy line there. But, Robert, you want to tell us about your reporting and how you came across these individuals who it looked like at the time were, again, involved with Al-Qaeda. I mean, this is not something we've been hearing much about in the last couple of months or years, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Yemeni branch of Al-Qaeda, as it called itself, like a lot of other terrorist groups, maintains a very active internet presence. They put out a regular internet magazine called Sada al-Malahim, the Echo of the Epics, and they keep their readers informed about what they're doing. They recently put out a notice putting out a new issue of that magazine, but also taking note that their deputy emir, as they called him, their deputy leader, was Saud al-Shehri, and mentioning that he had been in Guantanamo and even giving his Guantanamo detainee number. So they were the ones really who put this out into the public. Gregory keeps very close touch on this stuff and actually knows more than I do about the group.
And so, Gregory, given these concerns and the unfolding information that is coming out, clearly, it highlights the very difficult position that the Obama administration is in trying to now fulfill that promise of shutting down Guantanamo Bay and the 245 or so detainees who are currently there.
Right. And a number of the detainees that are there are these kind of in-between detainees, detainees that are suspected of links to terrorism, but the U.S. really doesn't have any evidence with which to convict them. And a number of the Yemeni detainees are linked to other individuals within al-Qaeda. So this group that Robert just mentioned, al-Qaeda in Yemen, there are individuals very high in the upper ranks of that organization who have brothers in Guantanamo Bay currently. And there's a real concern about what would happen would these individuals rejoin al-Qaeda, rejoin their brothers if they were released from Guantanamo.
And so what is your advice or suggestions, or what are the issues being debated as this is addressed?
Well, I think one of the things, the most important thing that the Obama administration needs to keep in mind as they go through kind of vetting and going back through the files of all these detainees, is they need to have a number of individuals there with expertise in the countries of origins from these detainees. Because as you read through the declassified documents, it's quite clear that some of the people on the tribunal just didn't have the expertise in Middle Eastern history or in Arabic or what have you to really make qualified judgments about some of these individuals.
And Robert, given your reporting, what do you think is going to be the critical component? Do you believe or do you agree with Gregory that that sense of context is critical, or are there some other issues that you think that need to be at the forefront?
No, I think he's absolutely right. And I would also add that I just to be perfectly clear, that the fact that two former Guantanamo detainees are now in this Yemeni terrorist group does not mean that the Saudi program doesn't work. I think they have made a lot of progress, and they have obviously all the contextual information about these people and how to deal with them. And I think some of the things they've done, working with these people, having imams work with them, often trying to find them a job or even help them get married, these things help people settle down and stabilize, and I think in a great many cases it works. They don't want to go off and risk their lives. I've talked to a number of former jihadists in Yemen who I think the Yemeni government actually did have some success in terms of settling these guys down. It's in Yemen mostly, I think, a younger generation who feel they have less to lose, who are the most active and violent of the jihadists there.
And that's certainly going to be an enormous challenge for the Obama administration. Robert Wirth, New York Times correspondent, coming to us from Beirut. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Gregory Johnson is a terrorism analyst with the Jamestown Foundation, which is a global terrorism think tank. And we thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich, as we've been talking about this morning, is comparing himself to Nelson Mandela and Gandhi. And we want to hear from you. Who should Blagojevich be comparing himself to? And if you were to compare yourself to another person, who would that be?
My name is Beth Iris Levine. I live west of Boston, and I'm going to choose three, if that's allowed, leaders, past and present. The first is Golda Meir, the great leader. The second is the assassinated Israeli leader, Yitzhak Rabin. The third is a living Palestinian Authority leader, Hanan Ashwari, who I've had the pleasure to speak to personally. I greatly admire all three, and I try to aspire to live up to their goals and what can be done.
Okay, folks, that's a challenge to you. She had three. Who would you compare yourself, or who would you compare Blagojevich to? 8778-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. I'm Adora Udoji. Catherine Lanfer is in for John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo. Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.